Good morning, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Coaches on the Couch, the podcast about leadership in the built environment. I'm Louise.
And I'm Rachel.
And this morning, we are joined from their virtual couches by Charlotte Morfitt and Catherine Gregg. And we're both really looking forward to this conversation. But before we get started, perhaps we could ask you the most important question of the day, which is tell us something about your couch. And Charlotte, perhaps I could come to you first.
Yeah, so I was thinking about this, and my story about my couch is it's the first piece of furniture I bought when I moved into my flat. So it sort of represents my independence and my start of being what I call a proper grown-up.
Lovely.
Brilliant.
And Catherine?
Well, very similarly, my couch, although it's actually a chaise longue, which makes me sound quite fancy, is the first piece of furniture that I bought when I kind of moved into a flat, which I've many years ago, and I actually subsequently have moved into a bigger place, and I don't have a couch. So the only thing I have, in fact, I live in a building site, we're doing lots of work, very lucky to be able to do lots of work, and I have no sofa, just a chaise longue, so it's particularly strange looking.
Oh, I'm looking forward to seeing a photograph of that. Always sounds a little bit louche, is that the word, to have a chaise longue? We haven't had one of those before on the podcast, so that's very nice.
We haven't.
So now that we know more about your couches, it's time for a more formal, just very quick introduction. Catherine, you're a founder and director of Make Good, which is an architecture and design studio with meaningful public engagement and co-creation at its heart. You've co-designed with local communities public realm improvements at Loughborough Junction, and then working with Year 5 pupils at Bow Arts and Valence School to co-create new mindfulness spaces, which I think is just such a lovely idea.
And Charlotte, you're a town planner, currently with St Albans City and District Council, and you and Catherine share a passion for shaping and creating better places. And I think you've also have in common a commitment to diversity, inclusivity, equality, both in terms of places and the professions. And Charlotte, you're the co-founder of Women in Planning, and you're also currently studying for a PhD in Women Planning and Leadership, which I'm really interested in. It sounds like my kind of thing without the planning, maybe just the leadership. So we'll probably come back to that later in the conversation. And we thought today it'd be really fun to invite you both on together, as both of your professions involve listening and the role of listening in successful placemaking, which Louise and I as coaches think is a vastly underestimated skill and particularly important to leaders, and much harder than people think. So perhaps we could start by talking a little bit about that. You know, what makes a good listener?
So I agree with you. I think everyone thinks that they can listen because they've got ears, but they don't actually think of it as a skill that you need to, you know, just like running or speaking, you need to practice doing this. It's something that actually is probably not a thing that we consider that we need to cultivate. And then really listening, like the key thing about listening for me is about being in the right mindset to listen, because so often our brains are so full of other stuff that we're hearing information and trying to tally it and compartmentalize it into something that we either already think or that we already want to do, or we're, you know, making assumptions about what to do with that. So it's really about, are you putting yourself in the right conditions to be able to start listening effectively?
And how do you do that, Catherine?
I mean, I'm going to sound like I'm brilliant at this all the time, but I think for me, it's very much about having space in between things. So I need to know that whether I'm talking to my team or I'm talking to someone on a project or I'm going into a meeting, it's about having space before to really clear my brain and think about what it is that this conversation I'm about to go into, what's it about, and then have space on the other side to be able to process it. I think it's been really interesting over the last however many months that we've taken that space away and have done quite a lot. I think we've all got used to kind of back to backing things a lot more, and I certainly find that, you know, I'm probably someone who's practiced listening a lot more than your average person, and my brain gets really exhausted, and I realize that I kind of trip into being defensive or kind of just wanting to turn it, what I'm hearing, into an action, as opposed to really sitting in the listening space.
That's such a good answer. I love the idea of space before and between, and totally agree that we seem to have lost that. And Rachel and I have talked about this because I found with some coaching sessions now, I actually end up finishing them 10 minutes earlier because I know that if I finish at 10:30, the other person's meeting is probably starting at 10:30. So it's best if I finish at 10, if we finish at 10:20, and I can give them 10 minutes for reflection and kind of closing off that conversation and that learning in their mind before they go straight on to the next thing. So getting in the right mindset and the space before and between. I like that. Charlotte, what do you think? What do you think about what makes a good listener?
I agree with Catherine, actually, and everything she said, that it's really difficult, I think, to be a good listener because there's just so much going on. And I think it's quite hard within my specific profession because we're supposed to listen to so many different people, similar to Catherine in terms of stakeholders, but so many different stakeholders, both internally within organisations that we work in, especially in local government, understand their language, which can make listening harder, and then also understand that and be able to translate it to other people. So listening can be in the community, and listening can be really difficult and quite exhausting. And I wouldn't say I was very good at it yet. It takes time, and it isn't something necessarily that everybody spends enough time on. And the way that I'm trying to get better at it is to learn to be empathetic, because I think by being empathetic and using that as a leadership skill, that requires you to listen more and to be more present. And I do think these back-to-back meetings and that we're having, and back-to-back Zooms, and I mean, that space between walking between meetings does mean that you're less present sometimes in the meetings than you want to be, and it is harder to listen, like Catherine said.
I think it's also, it's interesting that we're all saying that, and actually, you know, if I think about listening outside of the of my organisation and the client teams, if I think about listening to the public, it's, you know, having empathy for the fact that that's other people, that's their experience as well. They're also finding it hard to listen and speak and formulate your opinion, because we are all finding that difficult. So it's, you know, listening and being aware that there are two people in that, like you can you can listen really acutely to what someone's saying, but also they're also got their own, they might be speaking but with a really busy background brain of kind of everything else that's going on, and being aware of that.
It's a really interesting point. You're not in control of other people's listening or ability to listen. And I'm interested in the, you both used the word empathy there, and how we sort of work on increasing our empathy. I mean, how, Charlotte, I think as you mentioned that first, how are you working on that?
Just trying, because I think listening takes time, and so does empathy, just trying to sort of see other people's perspective and learn more about different types of personalities and people to understand how other people respond or might respond to situations. You know, not everybody is the same, and just remembering that I'm quite an outgoing extrovert person, and that's not always that usual within planning as a profession, I would say, actually. When I've done leadership courses, I can be quite the polar opposite to everybody in the room, and just being, having more awareness to that. I think that's how I'm trying to be more empathetic, having more of an awareness to different people and their needs and the way they communicate. And I think Catherine's right, and the way that they may be listening or can't listen at the moment or in that moment.
As you were both speaking there, I couldn't help thinking about the new president-elect of the United States talking about, you know, the polarization, because what happens when we don't listen and we lose any ability to empathize is that we become increasingly polarized, don't we, into our own little echo chambers, even if they're just the little echo chambers within our own minds. And how listening and empathy sound simple, but they're actually, if practiced consistently, quite revolutionary.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really important for us to vocalize and name that it feels incredible to be heard and to be seen. Actually, we don't have to agree with each other, but if you hear me and I'm in a conversation and I feel like you you heard me. And equally, when I think, oh, I'm connected to this person and I'm hearing them, and I don't have, you know, I'm not all powerful, I can't solve everything, but if I can hear and make that person feel heard because I'm in that conversation, what an incredible point of human connection. Mm-hmm. And we kind of, I think, get fixated on lobbying, on conversation being about lobbying or convincing or imparting information and then convincing you round to think the same way as me. And, you know, I naively think, well, if we strip that back and made it about connection, what would we do differently? It's like one of the things I say quite a lot, and even more recently, is I can't really hear this information right now. I'm really struggling to hear this information because I can feel my brain flick into like panic or defense, or like, you know, batting it away or thinking that's inconvenient information for me to hear right now, so I can't deal with it. So I've tried to kind of reset. It's probably really annoying to hear, but like I've tried to reset and just think, I need to get out of this conversation and then have it at a moment when I know I can be in it.
Yeah. What do people say to that? I'm just interested, like, how do people react when you say that, Catherine?
I think some people are shocked. It depends who it is. So if it's a client, I think they've been shocked and just, I don't know where to put that, but it definitely is a full stop on a conversation. It's like, let's reschedule. And I think because I then do pick up and reschedule those conversations and prep for them, then I think it's okay. But certainly it's a strange thing for people. Like it's not part of our vocabulary. It's not something that we hear people say.
I was just thinking that actually saying that actually has applications in more contexts than the one that you've just mentioned, because, you know, we can be working with people and we can be talking about how important it is for people to set their own boundaries and to go into situations where they feel prepared to have the conversation.
Well, this is the thing about practicing, isn't it, listening, that I think we think about listening as being something like, you know, I do it for my job. So I go to, like, you know, my job is a lot about engagement and working with the public. So I'm listening when I go to the public. But when I'm at home with my children, with my partner, with my family, with my friends, with my colleagues, I'm not listening, or I don't need to exercise that skill. And that's not true. It's like, actually, we need to exercise and practice this in every area of our life, which is, you know, I think about, and there's a little bit of me to answer your question, Charlotte, that wears that badge of like, I'm prepared to like name the thing, even though it's hugely awkward. So I'm a people pleaser. I don't want to say to someone, I can't hear you. I want to say, I can hear you brilliantly. Not only am I going to hear you, I'm going to action what you're saying and you're going to be amazed by how brilliant I am. But it doesn't work that way. So I have to be honest and say, I can't right now.
So it's the consistency of it.
Yeah.
Whether it's being consistent with doing it or occasionally having to articulate that you're pulling out of that space for a while.
Yeah.
And then going back into it in a consistent way, present way.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm. You mentioned your role in there, Catherine. Maybe you could tell us just a little bit more about how listening is applied and is changing within sort of design and the planning process.
I think it's changing because I think there's so much more awareness of the fact it needs to be done. But I think there's a long way to go in kind of the skills of listening and also what you do with what you hear. So, you know, does every piece of listening have to turn into an action? And do I need to evidence that I've actioned all the things that I've heard in order for that listening to be successful? And so then I think very often we can tie ourselves in knots with thinking, well, there's no point in asking that question because I can't do anything with the answer. So if I can't do anything with the answer, I can't have any conversations, so I can't do any listening. So I think we've got, you know, it's a slightly curious time where we're both simultaneously really aware that we need to do more listening, or it's become a thing that is, it has to happen. So listening is commenced without necessarily the kind of parallel track of what are we talking about, what am I listening to, and what am I going to do with it, and then I can quite often see these kind of like panic moments of how we align those things. But, you know, I think it's amazing. I would say, you know, when I set the business up, people were not so aware in any way, shape or form of the role that a business like Make Good might deliver, but also the nuanced skill of that business, as opposed to it just being something that anybody can do. You know, actually, we don't need to bring in a specialist to do that because anybody can do it. So, yeah, it's an interesting time.
Mm. I'm interested in the sort of levels of, because I know you get involved in co-design as well. I'm interested in the levels of listening almost that go from, if you go way back in sort of traditional consultation, and there was a style of listening there, and how that's now changed when you start to get into co-design and other forms of sort of participation.
Mm. Well, I think it's a lot more about influence, you know, because you might listen to the same level of information, but you're, mm-hmm. but the influence that stuff, the information that you're hearing has is much greater. And, you know, if you know, some of the projects that Louise described in the introduction are, you know, there's a different scale of them. Like, actually, if we're working in a school to kind of co-design something, their influence is much, much bigger, of course, because you've got a smaller audience, you've got a lot more control than you have if we're out in the public realm, where the audience to that is infinite. And the kind of policy and legislation background to that is so much bigger. So I think, you know, and there's merit in both of them and in all of them, because, you know, things that build agency in all of us to think that we have a voice and that voice is valid and should be, like, we can make our opinions known is something that I think is really, really important to build in from a super early age. So that's why we have those kind of different scales of conversation. I think it becomes much more challenging when you're talking about co-designing or kind of co-producing a piece of policy or co-producing a, you know, a local plan for something. It feels like that is when I wonder about particular types of terminology that are just really popular being applied to something that actually is much more specialist and involves actually so many different disciplines that if you really thought about it, not everyone is going to want to understand that detail in order to get involved.
Yeah.
The listening becomes like, you can still listen, but it becomes much more directed to kind of particular areas, and you allow everybody to have their own point that they want to make, as opposed to saying everyone's got to have an opinion about all components of this in order to be valid.
No, I like the distinction you draw between listening and the need to take action. And that sometimes, I mean, certainly many people listening to this podcast will know that my background is in stakeholder comms primarily around large regeneration and development schemes. And sometimes I have to say that I felt uncomfortable with the terminology of consultation, because I knew that pretty much the design was kind of done. but it was still important to hear and to allow people to influence and to be heard. And I guess that's kind of your experience as well, isn't it, Charlotte?
Yeah, I was thinking about this before doing this podcast. I think Catherine's right. I think people too often think they can do engagement and the listening, especially on something as complex as a local plan, which has so much going into it. And the people that have prepared it sometimes can't listen because they've spent so much blood, sweat and tears preparing it and getting everything ready. That it was really interesting in Waltham Forest that through public practice, we actually got an engagement officer in the team to lead that work. And I thought that was a really interesting move for that authority and something that I could see happening more, that you need these people in-house to then work with people like Catherine to get the most out of engaging communities in things like local plans. And I think that's the one thing that's come out of the new government reform, the only thing I will say about any sort of planning legislation in this podcast. But there's an emphasis on engagement, and I think that's really, really, really important, because when you're doing these big plans, the people that are doing all the really technical work just don't, it gets left to the end because you're trying to write it so that everybody can understand it, and you're trying to get all your evidence together. You've got to do it within a time, you've got to take it through all the political processes, that when you get to that bit where people have the influence, you're sort of, you're worn out, actually, to be honest. People think that policy planners like me have an easy ride, but it's actually quite a roller coaster because it's got highs, lows, peaks and troughs of sort of effort. And, you know, I won't be the only person to say that you sometimes you're just trying to get it over the line with the resources that you have. And you do need somebody to sit back and go, OK, well, how's the community going to take this? How are you going to listen to them? And why are you listening to them? What exactly is the role of listening in this particular project? How much can we actually take from what we're listening to? Which, yeah, it's difficult, very difficult to find the space to do that, to actually do it meaningfully. And I think a lot more in that particular sort of profession and process needs to be considered. It's very different in planning applications. I think people do have influence and you can listen to them more because it's about a specific project. But when it's about something that spreads like 15 years, it's very abstract. It's a whole different type of engagement process that I think you need. And I don't think we've cracked it yet.
So in that context, what we're doing is we're struggling to get engagement, and we're also standing on the side of people whose voices we want to be heard. And which brings us quite neatly, I think, Charlotte, to, you know, I don't know how long ago it was, perhaps you can clarify for us, but at some point you found it important enough to get women's voices heard in planning, and to actually found an organisation, show leadership, and found an organisation called Women in Planning. I just wondered what the role of that group, well, first of all, the thinking behind the need for that group, and then secondly, the role of that group in getting women in planning voices heard.
Yeah, so it was set up by me and my friend Alison Mackay 8 years ago. And I think it was about making women's voices visible. Like, women would be on emails, but they wouldn't necessarily be in the meetings. We wouldn't go to the meetings. It would always be the men would go off and have the meetings and come back, and then we do all the work. But we just didn't feel like women were very visible and their voices were very visible within our profession. And actually, out of most of the built environment professions, we have more women. We have about 40% women. And we really saw the role of women in planning giving women a platform to hear other women's voices, and to have a platform and a place for them to actually find their voice as well and speak to other women and feel confident with their voice, to sort of be somewhere where they could test out their professional voice, like start to argue about what they thought professionally. And that's really what we saw it for, and to make it free and accessible as well, which is a big thing specifically within planning, because it is about 50-50 public private, and you know, local authority planners can't always afford to go to the same events that private sector planners can, and to sort of allow that mixing to happen.
So bringing public and private sector voices together and giving women a forum in which to test out, I like that idea of having an opportunity to test out your professional voice, presumably in an environment that feels a sort of safe and confidential, a safe psychological space in order to test out.
Yeah, and when you feel confident, we will give you a platform to actually organise an event or be a speaker. And then once you've done that, you're then sort of seen as more credible, and you can go on and speak in other platforms with loads of other people.
I'm nodding, thinking, like, I am in awe of people who like start things like that and join in things like that. I was actually just thinking, I'm so bad at joining in stuff. Don't attend these things. That sounds so blissful.
That's really interesting. I'm just going to draw us out into the sort of leadership, the realm of leadership, because there's some things which you've said throughout, where I think there's some parallels to be drawn in how we lead people and businesses. So if I just go back, I think one is a lot around sort of setting and managing expectations about what you do with what you've heard. There's something around being in the right space when you are trying to listen to people, particularly I think now during the, you know, stressful time that people have had, leaders have had over the last 6 months. There's this change in sort of level of involvement, which I think is a societal sort of shift that's happened within the consultation process, but I think is also happening within businesses where, you know, years ago, people would have just said our strategy is whatever, this is what we're going to do. And over the years, there's been an increasing level of involvement to the point now where sort of quite ground up emergent plans are formed with individuals within the organisation. And then the final one there was helping people to find their voice. So I think those are sort of the parallels for leaderships in what you've said. I just wondered what you'd sort of add as when you think of yourselves as leaders.
I consider my job title to be leadership. Not job title, my job role, what's it, description, that's the word I'm looking for. So I consider my job description to be leadership. Like, that is what I need to be doing on a regular basis. Think, oh, I'm not doing my job, I'm doing like other people's jobs within the business, because I think we all default into kind of doing an action. But once I reframed kind of how I thought about my role as being leadership, it really changed the business, because it made me think about how we are externally, how we could be the same thing internally, but also understanding the leader's role in terms of like stewarding, or like putting the context in place of, well, kind of financially, that's the implication of making that decision, or here's kind of skills wise where we want to get to. Are we taking a really big leap, or are we taking a kind of a leap that is manageable and we can do it to the quality that people expect of us? So I think, you know, there's a piece about thinking around the skills that you use externally within your own organization. And then I think listening, empathy and understanding is a really, you know, important piece from thinking about inclusivity as an organization. Like, are we not just diverse, are we inclusive? So are we hearing all the different voices and acting on those different voices and shaping a plan that is reflective of those, as opposed to me just doing some virtue signaling of listening and not necessarily doing something different? And I think it's really interesting to apply that to then the conversation that we've had about listening externally. Are we also thinking about, like, we haven't really like touched so much on kind of diversity, equity, inclusivity, like how the listening is done and how the listening is received also plays into kind of how you are addressing systemic inequality. So I think, you know, there's something really interesting as an organization for us and for me as a leader to think about how I can, like, what my role is in fostering a culture of inclusive listening within, you know, which means essentially I've got to hear some really uncomfortable stuff. That listening is all, in many ways, much, much harder than listening externally, particularly when I'm like, I describe Make Good as like my first child. Like, it is kind of so much of me. So it's really hard for me to listen, but I have to listen, and I've got to do that stuff. But I think it's like, you know, it's that leadership. Are you doing what you say you would do externally? Are you doing that internally?
I saw you lean forward then as Catherine was talking, and I was thinking Charlotte's got some thoughts there that relate to the kind of way that she's been studying about women and leadership.
Yeah, so a PhD is about women's leadership experiences, but within the planning profession. So Rachel, don't worry, not too much planning. it's more just it's within that frame of that profession and that sort of journey they might go on. So I will be having to do a lot of listening around women's experiences, as and it's through a feminist lens, and that is quite a feminist approach. Feminism is about listening to other people's experiences. So I'm hoping by the end of my PhD I will be a better listener. But I was just nodding along thinking about Catherine. Yeah, I find it really hard to listen when people give feedback on women in planning, because it feels like a baby as well. It's very hard, isn't it, if you're so close to something, to listen to all of it. But I would say what we try to do is be inclusive as possible with all of the different people that have joined. So we've got 14 different branches, and they've all got chairs, but some of them have got, lots of them got co-chairs, and we've got three co-chairs at a national level. we sort of, what everybody says about being part of our particular network is they all feel empowered and listened to, and that they're able to actively shape the organization and be part of it and have a role in it. And it's not like other ones where it's very hierarchical. It is a learning process to sort of practice what you preach. You know, it's a constant learning process and a constant like rethinking and reflecting around that and how you could do it better.
The other point that you both made in there was about the difficulty, but also the importance in listening to people when you disagree with what they're saying. I think that's so important and so powerful for actually for what comes out of that in sort of fresh thinking and better solutions and things. We're just going to finish off with perhaps one tip that you have for our listeners to become better listeners. I mean, maybe you could tell them to subscribe to the podcast or something, but yeah, one tip to become better listeners.
I'm going to say practice, being aware and therefore practicing. So,
and with everybody as well. You mentioned earlier about kids. I think, you know, practicing with partners, with friends, with kids, it can be so enriching, not just at work, because it's about developing that listening muscle, isn't it? And being consistent about listening.
Totally. My kind of, I think about lots of situations in my personal life where it's headed off an argument because I've just been honest. I've been like, I can't hear this right now. And you know, wouldn't life be better if we all had less arguments?
I was thinking that give yourself time to reflect. So, you know, reflect, have you actually listened properly? And do you, and possibly ask also with that, ask for feedback, ask for reflection from the people you've been in the conversation with. Do you feel like you were listened to by me in this conversation? Nice. Do you feel I have taken on board everything that you wanted me to? And if not, why don't we reconvene and have it at another time and we can go over it again and think about how we're saying it so we can both understand everything and both be fully aware of like the conversation.
Excellent advice.
Yeah, that's
great. Very good advice. I'm going to do that, Charlotte. Thank you.
I'm going to try it. I'm probably going to instantly regret it. I'm not good at conflict.
I was just going to throw in a quote that I think sums up a lot of what we've said. It's by a person called Kate Murphy, who wrote an incredible book called You're Not Listening, which I recommend. I'm not on commission, but it's understanding is the gold of listening and it takes effort, which I think just sums up everything that we've perhaps said. And unless, Louise, you want to add anything else?
No, I was going to add another book recommendation, which is actually The Talking Revolution.
Yeah, another good one.
It's a deceptive title, actually, because it's really about the listening revolution. Mm. But it's how creative conversation can change the world. And it made a big impact on me when I read this.
Yeah, it's a very good book.
Peter Osborne and Eddie Canfor-Dumas.
Okay, and on that note, when we feel we should be paid for our book recommendations, we'll wrap up. So, Catherine, Charlotte, it's been really nice speaking and listening with you this morning. And thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us. Yeah, it's been really good.